Right, we're in Mishlei chapter 14, verse 24. And it says, "The crown of the wise is their wealth, and the foolishness of the ksil is his foolishness." The first question is that the crown of the wise is not their wealth, but the crown of the wise is their wisdom. Okay, that's the first question. The second question, it says, the foolishness of the ksil is his foolishness. Yeah, that's absolutely true. I mean, he's just repeating himself. You know what I mean? It should say some consequence. It doesn't say a consequence. It just says that his foolishness is foolish. That's all it says. So those are the two questions that we have on this verse. So the answer is that we're talking about, in other words, we're talking about how the society looks at these people. Okay? The society looks at a person as how he uses his money, because that's their value system. So the way they value things is the way people look at their money. So they look at a chacham doesn't have greed, he doesn't have stinginess, he doesn't have spendthrift, but he knows how to handle money correctly. So you see that there is there's something there. That's his crown in the public. Okay? Now, the question also in the second half is, why does it say ksil? Why does it say the foolishness of any fool is foolishness? But since we're talking about money, the ksil is a person that needs immediate pleasure. So he's going to be a spendthrift. So his foolishness will be recognized by his foolishness. You say, by the way he spends his money, they'll recognize that there's something wrong with him. The way people handle their money, that's one indicator of how to recognize who people are. Verse 25 says, "He who saves souls is an honest, will be an honest or truthful witness, and he who spouts lies is deceit." Okay? The question is, what does he mean by saving lives? What do you mean saving lives? There's many ways of saving lives, and that just because you save a life doesn't mean you're an honest person. Okay? And he who spouts lies, that is deceit. What is he saying? Okay? And so the whole verse there really doesn't make sense. The only way that we could work it out, there is the Ibn Ezra. I've seen it in the Ibn Ezra, it might be in other commentaries, where they actually switch the subject and the predicate. Okay? And the only way we could understand this is to switch the subject and predicate. So in this case, the subject becomes an aid MS, an honest or truthful witness. And on the second half, it's deceit is the subject. And the honest witness will save lives, and the deceitful person will spout lies, whatever that means. We'll have to explain. Okay? The first half, the question is, by an honest witness, what causes a person to be honest? There's two qualities. If you talk about MS, you're talking about truth. If you talk about aid, we're talking about witness, then we're talking about justice. Okay? So the question is, what's the motivator of this guy? Is it the justice or truth? So the thing is that we want to say he is an honest witness because of his honesty. And the verse is saying that, in other words, usually you save lives if you're just, but you don't think of honesty as saving lives. What the Pasuk is telling me, if you are honest, then you'll be an honest witness, and that way you'll save lives. You'll save lives if you make a person innocent, so you're saving his life. If a person is guilty, then you're saving the lives of the people that he can harm, so you can protect society. So either way, the honest witness is saving lives. The question is not all trials is death penalties. So how are you saving lives? The answer is you save lives of people that steal. They ruin lives. By saving lives, it doesn't mean only the physical life, but the way of life. And you're protecting the society. Because once the society becomes bad, then everybody says, oh, if he's cheating and getting away with it, why can't I? In other words, if you allow people to get away with injustice, it only gets worse, does not get better. Okay? Are there any questions? Okay, anybody else? Okay, moving right along. Okay, once again, verse 26. The fear of God is a fortress, and to his sons it'll be a refuge. So the questions are, how is it a fortress? How is fear of God a fortress? And to his sons, it's a refuge. What's the difference between a fortress and a refuge? And why is it a refuge to the sons and a fortress to the parent? That's the questions. Fear of God means a fear of consequences. That's what fear of God is. So when you look at life from the consequences, so that's a refuge to protect yourself against making mistakes. So you won't make mistakes. Okay? Now a child, if he learns it, so he becomes a person that fears God himself, and he fears consequences. But if he doesn't, so he picks it up, he picks it up habitually. Like he does it naturally because he picked it up from his parents, or from whichever parent did it, he picks it up. When he picks it up, it's not a fortress, it becomes a refuge, meaning that it can help, but it doesn't help completely. Because there'll be times where he doesn't see clearly, since it's only part of his personality as a result of picking it up from his parents, but he doesn't see the ideas. So he lives a good life based on the way his parents raised him, but however, so he has a good life, but there are weaknesses. It's only a refuge, it's not a fortress. Of course, if he decides to sit down and learn and to study and to become a person that fears God, so then he'll be equal to his father, then he'll be a different person. Okay? Verse 27. Says, the fear of God is the source of life. To turn away from the snares or traps of death. Okay? So the questions are, it says the fear of God is the source of life, and then it says to turn away. So is the source of life and snares of death one thing, or is it two things? That's the first question. We don't know. The source of life is one thing, namely to turn away from the snares of death. And two is, why does it say to turn away from the snares of death? It should say to turn away from death. In other words, from the consequences. It doesn't say to turn away from the consequences, but to turn away from the traps of consequences. Since the first half is dependent on the second half, so the second half talks about snares of death or traps of death, and the snares or traps of death are our own emotions, our own incorrect view of reality. Okay? We have to turn away not from the results, but you must deal with the emotions that bring to these consequences. You see? So it's to turn away from the snares, meaning our own emotions, okay? Now, if you turn away from your own emotions, what happens is that you learn the only way that when you turn away from your own emotions, so you see the consequences of your actions, which is the fear of God, right? But it's the, in other words, seeing the consequences of your actions is fear of God. But the only way you can get there is by dealing with your emotions, because your emotions won't let you see it correctly. Okay? But the end result is that you'll be able to predict the consequences of the future. Once you learn to see